This is Anne Brand, and we're here to talk with my parents, Carol Ludwig Lawyer and Bill Lawyer. Tell us about yourselves and your family interest in Western history.
I'm Carol, and I was born in Laramie, grew up in Laramie until I was about five, and then my parents bought a ranch at Virginia Dale also. And so I grew up the rest of my life, part of the time, at least at Virginia Dale. And I was known as a city girl, and that was not a very nice thing to be called. Mm.
Oh, and for those of you that don't know where Virginia Dale is, it's just 25 short miles south of Laramie on U.S. 287.
At the Wyoming-Colorado state line.
You want to talk a little bit about your dad, Mom, since they bought a place at Virginia Dale when you were a little girl?
My dad, we had Ludwig Photo here in town. And my father was quite a historian. He started the Wyoming Colorado Westerners. He and T.A. Larson, I think. And my dad was quite a historian. And Virginia Dale was there before the railroad came to Wyoming.
Carol's dad, with the Colorado-Wyoming Westerners, was a group of people who were very interested in Western history, and that group still exists today. And her dad was very active in a number of things concerning Western history. He became involved with the National Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City. They have a life-size bust of him there, and his Stetson hat sits next to that of Western movie star Walter Brennan at the Cowboy Hall. And her mother and dad both were on the board of directors of that organization. And her dad often compared notes and ideas and would challenge T.A. Larson about various aspects of Wyoming and Western history. Carol grew up in that atmosphere.
Little pitchers have big ears, too. I heard a lot. I'm one of those kind of people. I relish some of the conversations that I was privileged to have back then.
Now, with our ranch at Virginia Dale, the original ranch house was a homestead built in 1907, and we still live in it.
Yes, we do. You can reach up and touch the ceiling. Don't have to worry about wiping the ceiling off.
Can you describe a little bit the community of Virginia Dale itself?
Well, it's a ranch community. It's very sparsely populated in about 100-square-mile area. There might be as many as 100 people, and it hasn't really changed that much over the years.
And I want to put a comment in that, too. Very much for me, it's a live and let live Western way of life. There's a huge cross mix of ranchers and interesting folks, and there's an appreciation for personal space as well as friendship and camaraderie that I found truly to be a way of the West and a way of Wyoming.
When I was small and a kid out there, like I said, I was known as the outsider. Thank heavens there was a girl that lived about a half a mile away from me. I played with her, and then the neighborhood kids would come and play with her. She was at a filling station that was on the highway. So I got to know an awful lot of the people that were there a lot quicker. The country life was completely different than the life in the city. Laramie was a big city. Fort Collins only had one street. That was a very small town.
And what were some of your experiences as a girl out at the ranch?
Oh.
Like school.
School was fun. We had, I think it was the second oldest school in Colorado at Virginia Dale. And everybody that went to school at Virginia Dale, first thing you did when you were a kid there and you got ready for school is that you got a pony. And you rode your pony to school. And it was a one-room schoolhouse with a teacher. We had a corral for the horses, and we had a him and a her. Most of the kids rode horseback to school until a later date when they were a little bit older and they could drive their cars to the school because they didn't have to drive on public roads, so they'd drive their cars to school.
And even though my mom says she was an outsider, she's told me stories growing up of being able to participate in the Christmas pageant.
Oh, yes. That was a lot of fun. My school teacher in town was nice enough to write out my work for me before Christmas so I could go to Virginia Dale, and I would go to school out there just long enough to learn my lines and be in the Christmas play. And sometimes we had one person in the school, sometimes we had five. You know, it just depended on how many hired hands the ranches around us hired that year and how many kids there were.
And did you have your Christmas pageant at school, or did you go ahead to the Virginia Dale stage station to the community center to have some of those performances?
We had it in the school while the school was still in session. The school no longer exists, but if you drive to the Virginia Dale station, which is about 4 miles south of the state line, it's the first building on your left as you turn into Virginia Dale. What county road is that, Bill?
That's Colorado County Road 43F, and it's located directly across from the Nuns Abbey.
Yeah, 100 years from a robber's roost to a Benedictine nun abbey. Mm. There's been progress. Mm. We have telephones now. We didn't have telephones. We have electricity. We have mail delivery. My heavens, things have changed over the years.
Tell us about the stage station.
The stage station was part of Fred Maxwell's ranch. The stage station...
The stage station goes back 150 years to June of 1862, when it was built by Jack Slade. You might call him the notorious Jack Slade. He was made famous by Mark Twain in a book called Roughing It.
And he shot 26 men. At least that's what I counted last.
Yeah, which likely is rumor, but Jack Slade relished in that reputation because it gave him the ability to maintain order with the roughnecks that were the drivers and workers on the Overland stage. Ben Holiday put him in charge of the stretch from Julesburg, Colorado in 1862 to the Wyoming area, and Virginia Dale was the midpoint in the roughly 400-mile stretch that he was responsible for. Jack Slade had quite a history. A lot of it was embellished because back in those days, before TV and radio and most people could read, telling tales was a form of amusement and also spreading the news.
So
his men idolized him. And as was said, he was known for shooting 26 men.
Well, and don't let them tell you the history book version of this.
No, we're not.
I grew up with my mother faithfully devoting a large portion of guests coming to our ranch a walk along the trails. You had to pick your favorite walking stick. That always added color to this. And then her reiterating a story about Jack Slade and Jules Rene. So I'm going to have her tell that story to you.
Well, Jules Rene, or Benet, is who Julesburg, Colorado is named after. And he was a trapper or a trader.
And also a crook.
And he didn't like Jack Slade.
And he didn't like Jack Slade, and Jack Slade didn't like him.
The reason they didn't like him and the Overland didn't like him is they had strong suspicions that he was stealing their horses and their feed and then selling it back to them.
But anyway, Jack Slade told Jules Benet that if he ever came to Virginia Dale, he'd had it, because Jules shot Jack Slade, 30-some times?
There's some confusion there, but Jules caught Jack Slade in an unarmed moment at what is now Julesburg at one point. And he so detested Jack Slade, he decided that he was going to do him in. And he, with his six-shooter, shot 6 bullets into Jack Slade and then pumped two barrels of a shotgun into him at very close range. He thought that he'd killed Jack Slade at that point, but somehow Jack held on, and first they had a doctor come from Fort Laramie down to check him out, and then they sent him to St. Louis. You can imagine the pain he must have been in riding in a stagecoach all the way back to St. Louis, and after a number of months he actually recovered, but they never fully removed all of the buckshot from him, or perhaps even the bullets, and so he lived with that the rest of his life in great pain, and that's one reason he probably became an outraging alcoholic in short order to kill that pain that he had. One thing about the Overland Trail, we should mention that at that time, the Civil War was underway, and the Union was calling troops back from the West to fight in the Civil War, and so Ben Holiday moved the route that had run across central Wyoming down to northern Colorado to avoid numerous Indian attacks that were going on at the time. So that's why the route went where it did, and it cut down the South Platte River to close to where Greeley, Colorado is today, and then over to LaPorte. LaPorte was a trapper and mountain man settlement that had started in the 1830s by French trappers. And then from there, it headed north up where 287 is today to the Laramie Valley, and then it headed west. What some people don't know is that 287, more or less, and it has varied perhaps a mile or more to the east or west from where it now is over the years, was an old-time Indian trail that had been used for hundreds of years, and prior to that, it was used by the ancient peoples, according to a history professor that we met at CSU a couple of years ago, that went back 12,000 years ago. So it's a well-established route.
And the highway still goes along the Overland Trail, surprisingly enough, which is quite interesting because it's been there for so many years. And you can sure tell.
We need to get back to Jules, Renee, and Jack Slade.
Well, anyway, Jules did come back after he had promised not to do so. So Jack Slade arranged for him to be caught and bushwhacked, if you want to call him that, near what is now Torrington, Wyoming. And after he was dead,
But I think you should let Mom tell her.
Yeah, you tell your version.
Politically incorrect version, right down to the watch fob.
Well, that's true, though.
Oh, boy. Well, Jack Slade was notoriously known for shooting people in the third button. So when he got a hold of Jules Renee, he backed him up against the barn.
And this is the barn at Virginia Dale.
Yeah, which has been torn down because it was got to be a risk. But he backed him up to the barn, and he nailed his ears to the barn door, and he shot him. So he cut off the ears and let them dry, and he wore them on his watch fob.
And one in his pocket.
And one in his pocket.
I think you got to end with the big humdinger that I always thought was interesting about Jack Slade being in trouble with the law, Mom. I think you ought to take it all the way to there.
All the way.
Well, that part takes him up to Montana. Yes, he only lasted at Virginia Dale for less than a year. He caused so many problems down at LaPorte and in Denver drinking that he got fired from his job, and then he headed north and west to the gold mining town of Virginia City, Montana.
But the thing about Jack Slade is that some people paint him as a good guy and some people paint him as a bad guy.
But you got to tell about the horse thieves and the barrel of whiskey, the whole nine yards.
Well, he used to steal horses from the Green Mountains in Colorado, and he'd sell them to the neighbors in Salt Lake City. He'd steal horses from Salt Lake City and take them up to Montana and sell them up there, and then he'd steal horses from Montana and bring them down here.
But most of those are undocumented tales.
Oh, well, I can't help it because they're undocumented.
So you mix fiction with truth. So
that's right.
Plenty of truth in the story, too.
But there's a Table Mountain by the Virginia Dale Station that is called Robber's Roost. And there used to be members of the Hole-in-the-Wall gang that were there. And he'd let them know about the gold shipments that came through. And there was only one way that you could enter Table Mountain. And I heard from one of the old-timers when I was a kid that they had robbed a strongbox, and that when they robbed the strongbox, they buried it where Dale Creek and Fish Creek meet by a tree which burned down, and I was going to find that gold. I rode all over everywhere. I was going to find that gold. That was just beyond belief. And Virginia Dale is named after Jack Slate's wife, Virginia. And he was up in Montana, and his wife was on her way to shoot him to save him the disgrace of being hung because they caught him for horse stealing. And she got up there too late. So she swore that he'd never be buried on Montana soil. So she put him in, according to the latest book that came out, put him in a casket in whiskey and left him in front by the window until the spring thaw came. And she took him all the way to Salt Lake City, where he's buried. And when I was a little kid, there was always this argument that Virginia Dale, because we used it for our community dances and our community get-togethers and our Christmas parties and stuff, they wanted our stage station and we wanted Jack Slade's body. And nothing's ever come of that.
And you know, so I want to pull my mom into this, but so she has some pretty entertaining stories because she was going to find the gold.
So yeah, I was going to find the gold. Would have been nice. Then I'd have been a millionaire.
She decided at a very young age she was going to interview all the old timers, you know, the folks that lived in the line shacks in the country that nobody talked to, that were recluses. And she has quite a few tales along those lines. So, Mom, I think you should tell a couple of them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me interrupt for a minute. What she would do as a little girl is she'd take her horse and she'd ride all over the hills in the Virginia Dale area to meet these people.
Oh, it was fun. They'd say, come see me. So I'd come see them. Like the one across the road, Florence. She was quite a character. She'd sit on her front porch in a rocking chair with a rifle across her lap. And she just rocked back and forth. And she was always inviting me over for gopher stew. So I went, and she was rocking back and forth, and never missed a rock. Lifted up her gun, and kapooey, one dead gopher.
How was her eyesight?
She's blind as a bat. The hired man used to have problems because she couldn't see to drive over the cattle guard, and she'd go through the fence, and then he'd have to go mend the fence. Then there was another one, and that was Bishop's Cabins with Cream. He rented out cabins, and you got cream with them, really. He had a dairy herd. Bishop's Cabins with Cream. They stopped by the State Line filling station to pick Waldine and I up for church. We had seven pews and an out-of-tune piano on a pot-bellied stove. That was our church, and a table covered with oilcloth. Anyway, he said, tell me, Ma, if anybody's coming on the highway. And he pulled right out in front of a pie truck, a P-I-E, Pacific Intermountain Express truck. They were all over everywhere. And we just barely missed it, and he got mad at her. And he said, why didn't you tell me that there was a truck coming? And she said, well, you didn't ask about trucks. You only asked about cars. That's the last time I rode with him.
Can you tell about the old-timer that invited you in for coffee all the time?
Yeah.
Not too many seventh graders get to have coffee, the cowboy
well,
way.
You got coffee when you came in. And I noticed that at the start of a week, there was more coffee in the cups. And by the end of the week, there wasn't that much coffee in the cups. And what he'd do is that he'd put the grounds in a big coffee pot and just boil the living daylights out of it. That's good old sheepherder's coffee, you know. So anyway, I said, well, I'll go dump the grounds for you. I went outside and I dumped the grounds, and there was a mouse in the grounds. First time in my life I'd ever figured out that I'd been drinking mouse for about a week. And then there was Arkansas. He was quite a character. He was a hermit. He had a one-room cabin with a lot of books. And there were always two place settings set at the table. I sat down one day for a cup of coffee, and I thought the dog was likely to kill me. I was in the dog's place. He was a World War I veteran, and he had a horse that was sway-backed. Boy, I'm telling you. And he'd wear ball tennis shoes, and he was helping us. We were moving cattle, and the horse just wouldn't go fast enough, so he got off the horse and started running around to move the cattle around his house. And we didn't have any rain. We had a meeting of the local ranchers to see whether we should get somebody to salt the clouds, which was a popular thing to do then. And he stood up and he said, "Well, don't care that much about salt and clouds, but if you came up with a wind stopper, I believe I'd buy it." And the wind does blow up on top, but it keeps the trail clean.
So since we're talking about interesting people in Virginia Dale, I want you to talk a little bit about Porky.
Corky.
Corky.
Oh, Corky was the only one that could saddle my horse. I thought that he was God. He had a watermelon belly, and he was bald, and his eyes were semi-crossed. And he was a good bartender and a heck of a good gambler. He had a pair of cowboy boots that were about 2 inches above his knees, and there was a V for the knee. My dad teased him one time and asked him how come he had boots that were so tall, because we all wore high-top boots because of snakes. And he said, "Just to tell you the truth, Doc, the reason I bought them is that they were 2 inches taller than Altman's." That was his neighbor across the way. But Corky was just lovely to us kids, and he helped us with the horses a lot.
And I want you to talk about the day he was fixing fence around Red Mountain.
Oh, he was fixing fence down around Red Mountain, and the barbed wire was down, and so he got to looking around for some wood, and he couldn't find any. He found something that he figured to do, so he propped up the fence with it and rode off. The more he rode off, the more he thought, and he thought that didn't look like wood to him, so he went back, and it was a mammoth tusk. He took it down in Fort Collins. He took it down to the university, and the university has it. But that was over by Signature Rock, and I do want to get back to Virginia Dale somewhat, though. There's a house and there's a Dale station, and we still use it.
It's been a community gathering place for decades.
4-H, all the community group meetings have met there.
Clear back to the 1920s.
Right.
And I was just reading an obituary in the Laramie Daily Boomerang a month ago, and I remember reading about this fascinating woman who grew up on a ranch in Virginia Dale, and how her mother gave birth to her at a Red Cross meeting at the Virginia Dale station.
Well, that probably was true.
Well, there's still a few of those people around who rode their ponies to the school, which is just a short distance down the road, maybe a half a mile from the stage station. And speaking of the stage station, this gets back to a little bit of the history, which many of local area people aren't familiar with. But the Overland Stage was very important to the Union. Abe Lincoln and others thought that California might go its own way once the Civil War started, and they wanted to keep California connected to the East. And another thing that was very important, and Jack Slade played a prominent part in, was the transportation of gold from California to the East to help finance the Civil War effort. And if it hadn't been for the what amounts to billions of dollars in gold being shipped east in the mid-1860s, it's very likely that the Union may not have won the war.
And as a kid, I just knew that I was going to find some of that.
Right.
Boy, I just knew I was.
So I can tell you, being her daughter, what happened. My mother found no gold.
That's right.
But did anybody find any gold?
There were some kids that found a strong box with 13 gold coins in it. about 20, 25 years ago. And that is the only gold, I think, that has been found.
So for those of you ambitious Western history buffs who want to look for gold, you can interview my mom. Mm.
But you can come to our community dances. They're lots of fun. They really are. They were a lot more fun when I was a little kid. They drag along us little kids to the dances at the stage station, and we'd lay on the horsehair couches on the coats and go to sleep, and the people would dance until midnight, and then we'd have supper. Then we dance till dawn, and then everybody go home and do their chores. I mean, the ones that could walk.
And, of course, there were many jugs with corn cob plugs in them, too.
Yes, there were, but no alcohol is allowed in the station. So it was generally in the trunks of the cars outside. So a lot of people went outside. But we had a fiddler and a heck of a piano player and a guy that played a bass wash tub. And it was very good, and the music was good. And people came from miles around. They came from La Porte. They came from Red Mountain Road. They came from Laramie.
When did the Maxwell family decide to dedicate the 7 acres around the stage station so that it could be the community center?
It was, as far as I know,
in the 1920s.
Yeah, it was before me.
Now, where was 287 at that time?
It was right in front of the stage station. When they changed to cars, they even had a gas pump there.
And to get to the location of Virginia Dale, in case you're not familiar with it, it's in a dale or a valley.
And a very pretty valley.
Very pretty valley with a nice green, well-watered meadow and a stream, Dale Creek, running right through it, and lots of pine trees, and it's sheltered by high peaks.
A rock cliff, actually.
And you can imagine how travelers by stagecoach in the 1860s, after traveling across flat Kansas and flat Nebraska and flat northern Colorado with hardly a tree in sight anywhere, came into Virginia Dale, and my heavens, there was this paradise. And travelers and reporters who made the trip to California would just write glowing reports about how beautiful Virginia Dale was. It was a paradise to them after that trip.
But Virginia Dale is our biggest legacy that we have to pass on to the future. And the engineers are helping. The fireplace is listing away from the building.
And the walls are also leaning outward a little bit, too.
So we're leaning the walls in. And everybody in the community, women included, have volunteered to help to fix it.
Now, the building structure is built out of hand-hewn pitch pine. And according to the engineers who did some drilling samples into these logs, they are rock solid hard, and they're in just as good a condition today as they were 150 years ago.
So for those of you who don't know, what's pitch pine?
Pitch pine is pine that has lots of sap in it. And when it dries, it burns really long in a fire. And when it dries in a log, it's harder than all get out, and bugs can't bore into it or anything like that.
And we're trying to restore the station to its original condition.
Is this the only stage station left of its kind?
It's the only one
in its original condition on its original site. There is one other Overland Trail station that was restored by the state of Wyoming that is just to the east of Rock Springs. However, that's been restored, and it's only used as a site to visit. It isn't actively used by the community, and it doesn't have the historical significance we feel that the Virginia Dale station has that was made so famous by Mark Twain in his book.
Where can people find out more about the Virginia Dale stage station and how they can help?
Well, they can contact us directly. That's Carol or Bill Lawyer.
You can stop by Ludwig Photography in downtown Laramie and say hi to me. My name's Ann, like I said at the beginning.
Or they can look up the website, VirginiaDaleCommunityClub.com. com. There are numerous comments on the internet about it.
You might find out something you didn't know.
The engineers estimate $200,000 is needed, not counting our free labor.
For supplies.
To restore this, to make the stage station hopefully last another 150 years. And we invite people to come out and see it. You cannot enter into the stage station except during our special celebrations, like our annual summer celebration in June, except by appointment. Our oldest granddaughter, Emily, in her fourth grade class about 3 years ago, went out for a tour, and they were met by an impersonator of Jack Slade, who did an excellent job, and they were really impressed with that. And there are other impersonators that we have during the year for special celebrations, such as Mark Twain, and Virginia Slade, and they dress the part, believe me, and they
are very good.
Live that role while they're there. You just can imagine Mark Twain with his cigar being chomped as he tells his tales and his white suit, which is a little bit soiled. He's an attorney from Denver that likes to come up. Or Jack Slade, who looks like the wildest desperado you've ever met, with his pistols ready to shoot anybody that gets in his way. It's a lot of fun.
We have a good time. We have a real good time.
There's one more I'd like your mom to tell, though. As a little girl, she used to go up to the state line, and there was always a poker game in the back room.
Yeah, there was. That was where the action was. The owner of the station had a deputy sheriff's badge, so he didn't have to worry. And he had a rifle against the wall, and everybody sat and they played poker. And it was kind of fun. I was in on all of it. Little pitchers have big ears, you know. I knew everything that was going on in the whole community. It's kind of bad, I guess, to be so nosy, but it was a fun way to learn the ins and outs of Virginia Dale. When we first moved out there, a lot of the people ate flour and water biscuits and venison. I mean, it was not a pretentious neighborhood at all.
Nope, and if you saw our homestead, you'd say, oh my goodness, how could they prove up on their claim? But there was a hen house and a turkey roost, and there was a small garden, and there was biscuits.
And we had a milk cow. They had a milk cow.
And like lots of homestead houses, it wasn't the elaborate thing that some people imagine from the movies and westerns that you see. That house is approximately 20 by 20, very small with low ceilings, as we've said.
That keeps the heat in the wintertime.
And no indoor plumbing.
Oh, naturally. You have to have a chick sales.
And I know for countless hours of entertainment, for my mother and myself, the party line was always something you could rely on if you were bored. You could pick up the receiver and listen to the neighbors talk.
When we were one of the first people out there to have a telephone line, and we were two longs and two shorts. And the fact that we were about two city blocks from the Wyoming-Colorado state line doesn't mean anything. But if anybody from Laramie tried to call us and tell us that they were coming out, they would call from Laramie to Cheyenne to Fort Collins to LaPorte to Livermore and then to Virginia Dale 1. And then to Virginia Dale 1-1, because we were Virginia Dale 1-1 with party lines like that, with two longs and two shorts and rings. Everybody knows who is getting a phone call. And here we were weekenders, and they were getting a call, see? So everybody'd pick up the phone. And when they picked up the phone, the juice went down. So what you'd have to do after you got done is that you'd say goodbye, Mrs. Funk, goodbye, Mrs. Bachman, and you'd tell everybody goodbye. And then you'd call the person that was first on the party line, and you'd ask them who called and what they wanted. Either that or they'd all get on the phone and just chat because The ranch houses were few and far between out there.
And then another thing that some people today may not realize is that until about 49, there was no electricity out there. None of the neighbors had any electricity. But Carol's dad was an advocate for getting REA electricity out there, and he called on everybody in the whole community.
Yeah, he sure did. We went down to Bishop's. We stopped by Bishop's to give him the spiel on why he needed electricity for his house. He had a two-story house that was Bishop's Cabins with Cream.
It's no longer there. It's been torn down.
We went in, and there was grain piled in the hallway, all the way down for the chickens, so you can imagine the dust and stuff. And he invited us into the dining room, and he took his sleeve, and he wiped spots on the table for us to put our elbows. And we put our elbows, and we were talking to him, and we were telling him just what you could do with this electricity business. Boy, you know, it was really hot stuff. Bishop looked at my dad, and he said, "Doc, I got electricity." He pointed to one wire strand hanging over the table with a light bulb about maybe an inch big. And he said, "See?" And then he took my father down to the barn, and he had an old model T Ford engine, and he started the engine up. And then we walked back to the house, and he flipped the switch, and the little light bulb turned on. And that was his electricity. And as far as he's concerned, that was just about all he needed.
Do you want to end with telling the story of Lover's Leap?
There is a tall rock facade.
Some people think it might be 600 feet high. I don't know, but
it's impressive.
It's very impressive as you head toward the stage station.
Along Dale Creek. And Dale Creek is a creek that runs through the valley, so there is running water. But there was supposedly a young buck and a young Indian girl, and they were from different tribes, and they were in love, and they wanted to get married. And the tribes wouldn't let them, so they jumped off at the top of the leap and reached their demise down below in Dale Creek.
And with that, we'll end.